Welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guest today, and for the third time, which is an indication of my utmost respect for him, is consumer advocate and prominent health fraud and quackery investigator, Dr. Stephen Barrett. One comment I would make about Dr. Barrett is I don't think P.D. Barnum was referring to Dr. Barrett when he said, quote, there's a sucker born every minute. For questions or comments about today's program, please call us at 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. Our email address, line1, that's L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at kska.org. Before I say hello to Dr. Barrett again, let me give you a little bit more of his background. He's relatively well-known throughout the nation as an author, educator, and consumer advocate. He runs this network of people concerned with quackery, which he calls Quack Watch. He's vice president for the Institute for Science and Medicine and a fellow of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry. In 1984, he received the FDA's Commissioner Special Citation Award for public service for fighting nutrition quackery. He's an expert in medical communications and operates 24 medical sites and edits Consumer Health Digest, which is a free electronic medical or newsletter discussing some of the activities in health fraud. He has written over 50 books, including The Health Robbers, A Close Look at Quackery in America, and is involved in 7 editions of the college textbook Consumer Health, A Guide for Intelligent Decisions. Dr. Barrett, glad to see that you're still doing what you're doing, and welcome to Line One again.
Thank you. I'm still doing it.
Tell us, in your words, what you're doing. I think that's the best way to help people understand what this is all about that you do.
Well, I look at what's taking place in the health marketplace, not just medical, but pretty much everything. False advertising, misleading news, poor quality television programming, infomercials, illegal product sales, certain types of unscientific practices, pretty much anything that comes along. I regularly get notices from people, anywhere from 20 to 40 emails a day that suggest things that I might look at, and I don't have time to look at all of them. But as time goes on, I cover many of them, and if I find something that looks like it might be feasible to write about, then I may write about it. Right? My 24 sites have about 5,000 web pages, which is, I don't know, the equivalent of probably well over 10,000 book pages. And I cause a lot of trouble for people who are engaged in unscientific or unethical practices. I've helped people go to jail, and I've recently was involved in shutting down a very dishonest clinic. I answer individual questions, and I have a lot of fun. I have a lot of friends that I've made over the years. I have friends all over the world who I occasionally meet when I travel. It's a very interesting thing that I do.
You make it sound more interesting, maybe more glamorous than I would think. I think about you, and I think about how brave you are, and then I go on the internet and put Steve Barrett in Google and look at all the junk and innuendo and misrepresentations about you, and realize that you've been in lawsuits one way or the other a number of times. It seems stressful. Obviously, it must be worth it to you to continue, but I have to say, you're a brave man.
Well, the stress of the lawsuits has never been related to any kind of fear of losing. It really, the stress is that they take a lot of time.
Right.
I don't particularly want to be involved in any, but sometimes it's necessary. About 12 years ago, somebody was actually hired to try to destroy my reputation, and most of the suits that I filed were in an attempt to dampen that, and some of the suits were successful, and some of them were not. It's very tough with the internet because, you know, people can put up information, and then the next thing you know, it's on 50 other places. So even cutting off the first one doesn't necessarily solve the problem. So, but you know, I've had to learn that as I went along.
One thing that you have said that may be curious to listeners is that you have no fear of losing or are very little concern about that. Perhaps it would help for you to expand or expound on why you say that.
Right. Well, if somebody were to, I mean, I have nothing to lose if I lose a suit that I file against somebody. Usually, I mean, somebody libels me and I decide that I want to try to stop it. You know, if I don't stop it, so it's still there. I don't generally lose much. But if somebody were to sue me, and that's happened a couple of times, I don't feel that I'm at much risk for losing because I'm extremely careful with what I write. And in order to actually win, you pretty much have to notify the person and say, hey, you know, I don't like what you're writing. It's wrong, and this is why it's wrong. And, you know, I've had a lot of letters like that, a lot of communications, and I look very closely, and if I think that, you know, after I consider what they say, if I think that I'm correct, I stick to it. Mm-hmm. If not, I change it. Mm-hmm. And so I don't, in order to win, you not only have to say something that's false, but you also have to show malice, and I don't happen to have any. Mm-hmm. Malice being persistence in saying something that you know is false, which I never do, or reckless disregard for the truth. And I'm not at all reckless. I'm very, very careful about what I write.
So what you write and put down on the websites and in books and so forth is very well referenced and very well accepted as being honest. And so it's difficult then to have a successful lawsuit against you, but there are hassle lawsuits, things that take up time and money, even though they may, and it sounds like they often do, get dropped before anything ever happens.
Well, there have been a total of 6 against me. 5 were defended with no out-of-pocket expense by me, mm-hmm. but various reasons. I've had volunteer attorneys take care of some of them, and mm-hmm. and one was handled by an insurance company.
Yeah.
I'm facing one now that there may be some out-of-pocket expense, but I've also asked people to donate to help me cover expenses, and the chances are that the donations will cover them. So there are a lot of people who like what I do, and they've
yeah,
been
sure.
pretty generous.
Sure. And a corollary, the way I would think about it, if you're so careful at what you're doing and so successful at it, then people should have an innate trust of what you write, even if they don't believe it or are not willing to accept it.
Well, there are some people who have very strong beliefs in particular methods, and if I happen to criticize their favorite thing, they may not be able to accept anything that I say. And there are other people who, I get a nasty message or two every day saying that I'm simply either hired by drug companies or biased for drug companies. I love the ones that say I'm hired by drug companies. I'm not even particularly fond of drug companies, and the idea I don't do anything that they would want to pay for. But some people absolutely know that, you know, I'm hired by drug companies. I wish I could find the money.
mm-hmm.
You know, the drug companies do a good job in sometimes in producing drugs, but their marketing practices are and their research agendas are really very distressing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's something I learned about only in the last couple of years, where there was an excellent book put out by Marcia Angel about
right.
called The Truth About Drug Companies. A real shocker. They talked about how drug companies do research, but they don't necessarily look at the right questions. For example, if there's a good drug and they want to market a different one, but they don't have the patent, they may study it in a different way. They'll never do a head-to-head comparison so that, you know, we can see which is better. And so drugs develop a reputation for doing one thing or another, even though maybe a less expensive one hasn't been approved for it because they didn't study it that way. I'm not sure whether I'm being clear, but the point is
right.
that the drug company, a lot of drug company research is actually determined by marketing. The research is sound, but it's not necessarily in the public interest. What we really need to have is more research that compares different drugs that are supposed to do similar things to see if one's better than the other. And if they're not, they're probably, in many cases, they're all the same. Different chemical structures, but the same value, then people should buy the cheapest. And, of course, that would be very bad for the companies that have the most expensive ones.
Yeah, it seems like in my lifetime that has changed somewhat because the federal government got out of that funding of a lot of that kind of research, and then the pharmaceutical companies kind of took up the whole torch of doing the research, which they have that vested interest that you described. That's my recollection. Maybe it's not quite that way, but it seems like somewhere around 20, 30 years ago, the federal government backed out of the amount of funding they were doing.
President Nixon, and the succession of Republican governments, I think there was a drastic cutting of research money.
Right. I definitely want to see where your primary concerns and worries are and where your activity is now. We do have a phone caller who called in, and I feel obligated to kind of take his call, and then we'll move on to what you're doing. Jonathan, you're on line one.
Thank you for taking the call. Two quick questions. First of all, with regard to the last subject, how does Lipitor rate against its competitors? My doctor says Lipitor is the best far and away. And then the second thing, there's a new product, antioxidant, on the market called Protandim. It's marketed by Life Vantage Corporation, LifeVantage.com, and I'm just curious, is it as good an antioxidant as they say it is? They say that it's unique, dismutase or something like that is the key ingredient along with turmeric and others. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for your call, Jonathan.
You bet.
Okay, the second question is easy to answer, and that is that there are probably 50 or 100 or maybe 500 of the best antioxidants. Every antioxidant is the best if you listen to the company that markets it. In order to comment, I would have to know what the ingredients are, which I don't. But in general, I would say that people shouldn't be supplementing with antioxidants, period, because if you're eating a balanced diet with adequate amounts of fruits and vegetables, you're pretty much going to get the antioxidants that might be useful. And when various components of antioxidants like beta-carotene were studied in controlled trials, they were not found to be beneficial. And so I think the scientific consensus is that people shouldn't pay any attention to antioxidants, just eat a balanced diet. I certainly wouldn't recommend taking any kind of antioxidant supplements. A corollary of that is, by the way, never believe anything that a company that's selling a product that is a pill tells you. I guess you can't. Most of what the drug companies say is okay, but I'm talking about vitamins, minerals, homeopathic products, herbs. Never take any advice from a seller. It doesn't matter who it is, even if it's a pharmacist. You should get your information about those things from independent, non-commercial sources like Consumer Reports or the FDA or some of the independent newsletters. Never from anyone that has a financial stake. Now, the first question was, how does Lipitor compare? I don't think there have been any head-to-head comparisons of the drugs that are used to lower cholesterol. The important thing about cholesterol control or cardioprotection is that you get good medical guidance that depends on your risk factors and your blood cholesterol levels and so on. And for many people, it may not make a lot of difference which drug they take. There are a lot of good ones, but for some people it does, and I just simply can't give you a guide. There's, as far as I know, there's never been one written in a book because I think it's too complicated. That you need to find a doctor that you are comfortable with who can look at you as an individual and say, you know, these are the options.
You made a comment about not trusting people who are trying to sell you something, and you said something about pharmaceutical companies, and then you backed off. And I want to make it clear.
I didn't mean to include them.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because they have, what they say is very well controlled by the FDA, whereas herbs, vitamins, and supplements, that is not the case necessarily.
I think that the problem with advertising to consumers is that it may encourage people to ask for expensive drugs where they can get less expensive ones, or it may encourage a lot of people to ask for something when it's not necessarily appropriate for them, and it has the potential to waste a lot of the doctor's time explaining why it isn't for them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So,
all right, but
the information is usually, the information in drug ads is usually pretty accurate, although, as I say, it can be misleading as to whether it's useful for you.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is, boy, everything they say and do is very closely scrutinized by the FDA. So, but that doesn't mean they may not try to convince you that it's a better product than something that's less expensive, for example, by just the sheer amount of advertising, for example.
Right.
Okay. So, what's your primary interest? What are you worried about most? What are you trying to change the most right now?
Well, I become particularly concerned, going back maybe about 2 years, about a network of what I consider to be unscientific practitioners that are trying to put across certain kinds of ideas and treatments. And the main thing centers around the idea that people are at great risk for taking in all sorts of toxins and they need to be detoxified. It's not just physicians, but there are also lots of companies that offer you flushes and cleanses, and there are gadgets that supposedly can suck out the poisons. But the part that I'm most concerned about is I'm centered around a practice called chelation therapy, and that's a procedure where a chemical is put into your body. Usually by vein, sometimes by injection, sometimes by mouth, that supposedly will clean out lead or mercury or other metals that supposedly have accumulated in your body. The problem is that unless people have industrial exposure, or they're eating lead paint, or they're breathing in lead paint that's been taken off their walls, or they're doing construction, or unless a child is eating paint that was manufactured many years ago, you're not going to get toxic with lead. And then there's another a drive to convince people that they're mercury toxic, and supposedly from the fillings in your teeth for adults or maybe children, and from vaccinations that used to have a preservative that had a little mercury in it. But, of course, that's been taken out of most of the shots that kids get. The risk never was high, and now it's basically zero. Never was much above that. But there are a bunch of doctors that maybe 400 or 500 of them that are testing people and then telling them that they have high levels and they need to have chelation therapy. That's pretty bad because it's dishonest and potentially dangerous, but it doesn't end there. As part of the propaganda blitz, some of the same people are saying that immunizations are dangerous, and they used to say it was dangerous because of the preservative thimerosal, which had a little mercury in it, and when that was taken out, they couldn't give up their pitch. So then they started saying, well, it's too many. You're getting too many shots at once. It'll overwhelm the immune system. And so there's been published an alternative schedule where kids get their shots at a slower rate, and of course that exposes them to more diseases when they're young. So, I mean, the whole anti-immunization effort is just a horrendous thing.
Are there more specific issues? I think about the heavy metal thing. I think you mentioned in Consumer Health Digest recently about some situation that the CDC or NIOSH even got involved with in Florida involving
there was a very interesting situation. I've been involved actually in two communities that got upset because doctors ordered hair analysis, which is a test where they take your hair and they measure stuff that's in it. Actually, they measure mostly stuff that's on it rather than in it. But and they were told that they were toxic. And back about 10 years ago, there was a big hubbub in Clark Summit, Pennsylvania, where a few mothers were told that they had chromium toxicity, and they were afraid that they may have given it to their children. And a tremendous uproar that lasted for a couple of years. Finally, the community had a town meeting, and I was invited by Senator Spector, who asked that there be a meeting. I was invited, and an expert on hair analysis was invited. And we talked to all the people as a group, and then we talked to the mothers who were most concerned. And I think we pretty much calmed them down. That hair analysis is not a useful test for heavy metal toxicity. And then nowadays, there's another test that's used. It's they call it the urine toxic metals test. And you get a urine specimen, it goes away to a lab, and the lab reports it back. And the reports generally look scary. They often tell you that the level is higher than their reference range, and you know there's a red column and it says high. And then the doctor says, "Oh, it's high. You need chelation therapy or you need detoxification." And the fact is that the test simply can't show that. There are a lot of people getting chelation with claims that they're being detoxified when they have no toxins to begin with.
There's another corollary, to use that word again, with autism and an even more disturbing association, I recall, with a child with autism. I think it was at the University of Pennsylvania, back in Pennsylvania, who a child died during chelation for autism, as if the heavy metal toxicity was the cause of the autism.
Well, I actually saw the urine test, the urine toxic metal test, and it reported that it was high, but the test report was not was misleading because it wasn't high, and even if it had been at the level that the test seemed to say it was nowhere near the level at which chelation should have been used. And then the doctor, unfortunately, took the drug and shoved it in very quickly, and the kid died almost immediately. The drug was used in a way that would never be proper with anyone. So the child died. The doctor got disciplined. There was a lawsuit. The suit was settled out of court. I don't know the terms, but I'm sure that it involved significant payment.
Autism and heavy metals, what's the association, if any, there?
It's all in the imagination of a small network of physicians who have pretty much infected a large network of parents. There is none. Autism does not have a toxic basis. The basis is not known, but it's very likely to have a very strong genetic component that is somehow the... I don't think it has... It certainly has nothing to do with any toxin. And you know, there have been a whole bunch of cases brought into vaccine court where the parents are claiming that their kids became autistic from vaccination. And the special masters who function as judges looked at this for 2 years. I'm not sure there's ever been a case in world history where anyone looked so closely at a medical issue. And really came out swinging and said that the children who had been diagnosed with heavy metal intoxication had been abused by the physicians, and that there wasn't the slightest evidence that they that was a cause of autism, and they said that that they should not be compensated on the basis that the vaccine caused the kids to become autistic.
And there's a significant portion of the population of parents who are hesitant, perhaps as at least partly as a consequence of this kind of information, not to be immunizing their children, which at least appears to me and many healthcare providers to be making a decision that exposes their children to more risk than giving the vaccine.
Much more risk. And how do parents hear about it? Well, the major talk shows have very little interest in education. I don't know what makes them tick. I mean, Oprah Winfrey and Larry King have, over the years, have had one person after another coming on and giving bad advice about a whole bunch of things. But in particular, she's had guests come on unopposed that, say all kinds of scary things about immunization, and she got criticized severely by Newsweek magazine. But I'm not sure that she pays any attention. I don't know what people like Oprah and Larry King what influences them. But I know that over the years, when they get into controversial issues, they're almost always on the wrong side. That is related to health.
Let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. My guest today is Dr. Stephen Barrett. In Anchorage, if you've got questions or comments, you can reach us at 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. Our email address is line1@kska.org. We're going to take just a very short break, and then we'll be back to answer any calls and continue to talk with Dr. Barrett on Line 1, Your Health Connection. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
If you missed part of today's program, or if you'd like to listen to Line 1, Your Health Connection again, tune in tonight at 8. Remember, tonight's recorded rebroadcast will not be taking telephone calls. Following this afternoon's broadcast, Line 1 will be available on our website at kska.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard, your host. Today we're discussing health claims and consumer advocacy with Dr. Stephen Barrett, who's been doing this for a number of years. And a good source of information about what he does is quackwatch.com on the Internet. You can email your questions and comments to us at line1@kska.org. You can give us a call at 550-8433. And our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. Please remember, if you're listening in Anchorage or in the state, after 8 o'clock, between 8 and 9, you're listening to a taped rebroadcast. Dr. Barrett, besides this program, I've recently started giving some short commentaries on a local TV station. And one that I plan on talking about fairly soon is something called the HCG diet, which I became familiar with when a parent asked me about it, and then asked around and was somewhat surprised to learn that lots of nurses as well as other people are involved in this diet. Are you familiar with that?
Well, it was around many years ago. Basically, involves a shot of a hormone and a very low-calorie diet. The hormone doesn't do anything useful. The diet will cause people to lose weight if they follow it. there's no reason to take the hormone. It probably has some slight risk, but and no benefit.
Yeah, that's kind of my conclusion. Plus, it costs you some money, and the 500 calorie a day diet's not without some risk also for a while.
Yeah, I mean, who knows when people are advised to go on a 500 calorie a day diet what they actually do? I don't know. There haven't been any recent studies of HCG, but there were controlled studies many years ago that found that it didn't help people lose weight. It's not likely the studies will be repeated because there's no reason to keep proving the same thing over and over again. It's pretty well settled.
Yeah, I was actually surprised that even the FDA has come out and said it has no place or role to play in obesity treatment. So it has been looked at pretty closely. Phone call. Ron, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Well, hi. This is not medically related, but I'd just like Dr. Barrett to know that a few of us in Anchorage have started a group called AFACT, Alaskans for the Advancement of Critical Thinking. And I'd just like to see if you'd like to attend one of our meetings and perhaps address we're having skeptics in the pub meetings occasionally, which is always fun. Everybody has a few beers and talk about things that don't necessarily go bump in the night.
I'm afraid that Alaska is a little bit away from my neighborhood. It's probably not practical to think in those terms.
Oh, for some reason, I thought you were in Alaska for a time here. I guess not.
No, we're doing this by telephone.
I'm in North Carolina where the temperature has been running in the 90s.
Oh my gosh, a long time. Well, anyway, just to inform the public, we have started a group, Alaskans for the Advancement of Critical Thinking, and it's a skeptical group, and we're having a lot of fun with it so far. We're going to bring up a couple of people from the James Randi Educational Foundation in September to do a presentation called Skeptics and Psychics. And we have some other stuff planned, too. So anyway, that's what we're up to.
Yeah, Ron, okay. Let me know or send us an email, and I'll be glad to kind of promo those kinds of things. I appreciate your doing that.
Very good. Can I get your email address?
Just go to kska.org, line1 at kska.org.
Very good. Thank you.
You bet. Let's go to another caller. Mark, you're on line one.
I was brought up to believe that chiropractors were pretty much quacks, and then I see that their chiropractors are being used for all sorts of things with, you know, sports and so on.
Right.
And I'd like to have you folks discuss that a little bit, if you could.
All right.
Chiropractors do some things that are useful, and they do a lot of things that are not useful.
Go ahead.
I have a website called ChiroBase, ChiroBase.org, that has about 500 pages that discuss what they do. A few articles talk about what they do right, and most articles talk about what they do wrong, because what they do right is, although it may be much of what they do, is only a small part of the different things they do. It's not something I can... I mean, if you had a more specific question, perhaps I could answer it.
Yeah, he has dropped off the off the line.
I mean, I can tell you that I hear from people all the time that too many chiropractors are telling people that they have, you know, if their neck is curved, they say it needs to be straightened, and if it's straight, they say it needs to be made more curved, and if they don't get treatment, they're going to have degeneration of their spine, and many of them try to sign people up for 20, 30, 40, 50, or 100 visits in advance and get a payment, supposedly at a discount. I mean, encountering anything like that should be a red flag that causes you to leave immediately.
Okay. Another caller. Jerry, you're on line one?
Yeah, I'm glad I finally made the call. I've tried several times unsuccessfully. My wife is a registered nurse. I'm a registered nurse, and she is very interested in chelation. She's had some coronary problems, and chelation is a blood detoxifier. Does your guest have an opinion about it?
Has she had chelation therapy?
No, she never has. She's interested in taking it. There have been some study groups, and unfortunately, you need to have suffered an MI before they'll get you into the study group. And she's large. She's had some heart issues.
Well, what do you mean by a study group? What do you mean by a study group?
The study groups, sanctioned study groups, federally subsidized.
What you're talking about, that's not what you're describing is the wrong interpretation. There's a study being run by, being funded by the National Institute of Health to test it, but that study should never have been started, and it should be abolished, and because chelation is already known to be worthless. It's an
chelation is worthless.
Absolutely worthless.
Was it originally a detoxifier for heavy metals in the military?
It has very tiny use for severe cases of certain kinds of poisoning, but the chelation therapy that they do as part of this study is done differently. So that what's happened is that, and most people who have lead intoxication are not suitable for chelation therapy. There are better treatments available. It's hard to communicate this, you know, in a 2-minute soundbite. What you ought to do is go to quackwatch.org and start reading about chelation therapy, or go to chelationwatch.org, our other site, and do some basic reading about why it's worthless. Actually, if you do a Google search for chelation therapy, the article that is on my website has been number one for many years. So if you don't remember anything else, just search for chelation therapy with Google, and you'll come across the article on QuackWatch. Start from there, and then when you see links, go to the rest of the articles. But the idea that chelation has some use for heavy metal toxicity is true but misleading. But heart disease has nothing to do with metal toxicity, and what happens is that when the chelationists... they used to say that by chelating, they do certain things, and then it was shown that what they were talking about was nonsense. Then they started saying, well, we'll chelate for heavy metals. But that has nothing to do with heart disease.
Have a email from someone who's referring, I think, to some of the testing you were talking about, the hair analysis and for heavy metals and urine toxic metal tests. It says, please discuss who these labs are that are performing these bogus tests. Please discuss the need for better education, particularly in our public education, regarding these issues. And are educated people buying into bogus tests and claims, or does education seem to make a difference or matter?
I think that the best way to answer your question would be to refer you to the articles on QuackWatch. The urine toxic metal article that we have has a very simple URL that I can give out over the phone, which is it's quackwatch.org/t for toxic. And that'll take you right to the toxic metal article, and that links to all the rest. We have a list of labs that do non-standard testing, and I guess we address most of the questions, but it's too much to try to get into on the air.
A question I had that's somewhat related to her education question, and I would want to push you a little bit about what you think, is that it seems to me that a basis of a lot of this is the understanding of science and reasoning and the importance of testing hypotheses well. And there's so much misunderstanding, and sometimes it seems to be a significant amount of negative connotation about the whole issue of science that spills over into anti-evolutionary thoughts and so forth. To me, it seems like we all, in this age of science and technology, which is expanding exponentially, need to have a much better understanding of how to think scientifically. And I appreciate your comments.
Okay, well, you know, when you flip a light switch, you're taking advantage of scientific knowledge. You don't have to know what's going on behind the switch. If you understand something about science, you're more apt to choose your information sources more widely. In the marketplace, you can't be expected to understand everything you encounter. You mostly have to go by who you believe, and if you can pick reliable sources, you'll come out ahead most of the time.
Okay.
Sources that we call unreliable generally are not based on science. And having a scientific background may enable you to sort out the claims, but it's not actually sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are people who fool. I've seen very educated people with scientific backgrounds get completely fooled because the quacks just put things so they sound scientific,
mm-hmm.
and they're accepted at face value.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good point. Are there efforts being made to identify reliable healthcare sites on the internet, such as the Health on the Net Foundation, that you feel like we should comment on?
There are a number of there are lots of sites that recommend sites. The number of sites that go out of their way to make lists that are reliable are pretty small. I mean, I run one called Internet Health Pilot, and we list about 500 sites that I think are reliable. And I'm not so sure how many others do that. Health on the Net does a fairly good job when it comes to mainstream medical things, but when it comes to quack things, they don't do a very good job. Most of the large mainstream sites for the general public do a good job of presenting facts, but they do a terrible job of dealing with dietary supplements, herbs, homeopathic products. They're afraid to say that something doesn't work. And Health on the Net sometimes lets them get away with that kind of writing. They'll say, well, something hasn't been proven yet, when they should be saying, that's preposterous, and Quackwatch, we do that.
Yeah, sometimes it's how you say things. Let me remind our listeners that my guest today is a consumer health advocate, Dr. Stephen Barrett. If you've got questions or comments, our phone number is 550-8433, toll-free number 1-888-353-5752, and our email address, line1@kska.org. Ty, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes. What can we do for you?
Hi. Well, first of all, I'd just like to thank Quackwatch. Secondly, I had more of a broader question about the anti-vaccination boondoggle, and if our guest could, or your guest could talk about that a little bit more, especially the fact that it seems like people are intentionally trying to ignore the science behind vaccinations, especially like herd mentality, and the fact that ethyl mercury is used in the thimerosal that's in the flu vaccine, not methyl mercury, which is the type of mercury that's absorbed into our bodies, which is found in fish, and what has, I think, the NIH has recently found in herbal supplements. that's methylmercury, not the ethylmercury. I just wanted to, for him to, I guess, like, get the message out that the science is sound out there, and I don't understand why or how people are still choosing to ignore this and still listening to people, vapid voices like Jenny McCarthy and Jim Carrey, which is unfortunate because I used to think he was really funny.
Well, he might be funny, but not a critical thinker.
Yeah, and again, I'm really excited that there's a atheist free thinking group in Anchorage. I wish I could have got that guy's contact information. I don't know. I'm just excited to have a fellow free thinker on, especially one as popular as the runner of Quackcast. Quackwatch.
Yep. All right. Thanks for your call, Todd.
Well, people tend to believe what they hear the most, and people tend to think that if somebody gets onto a television show, that they know what they're talking about. And so people go as guests on shows like Oprah Winfrey and Larry King, and some people believe them. Jenny McCarthy is very dramatic in the way she presents herself. You know, my kid got autism and now he's fixed and happened after the shot and so on. The story is, I doubt if the story is even factual. I don't think things happened exactly the way she described. I don't know what the current status of her child is. If he actually was autistic, I'm pretty sure that he showed signs that something was wrong before he had the vaccines.
With organizations like Quackwatch and the amount of, it seems like there's a rise in skeptical organizations, especially along like science and medicine. They're on the rise, but it doesn't even seem like it's putting a dent into these substanceless conspiracies.
Let me speak to that. One of the things that people ask me is how come you don't get discouraged, because there's an awful lot of stuff out there that, you know, that could upset you. And my answer is, my inspiration was Dr. William Jarvis, who said that, you know, you put out garbage and the garbage trucks come and take it away. He says, but you never get rid of garbage. And there's always more. But if the trucks didn't come, you'd be buried. And so the realistic way to look at what I do is that I and the other people who do similar things do the best we can to try to minimize the amount of garbage that accumulates. It will never fall to zero. What we do is important because we get some of it to get picked up. I can tell you that I get satisfaction from the fact that I've had thousands of people write to me about how they've saved money or given up their quack or thrown away a product that they realized wasn't any good. I've helped the government send very, very dishonest people to jail. We do accomplish things every so often that are clearly measurable. But most of the things I do, the impact really can't be measured because, the poem? I shot an arrow into the air. It fell to the ground, I know not where. I shoot arrows every 10 minutes. where they land, I don't know. I occasionally hear from people who saw an arrow land. So I know they're landing. I occasionally hear from people who are very unhappy about where an arrow landed. So I know that that's effective.
Thanks for your call, Todd.
Thank you.
All right. Dr. Barrett, we got an email that asks, is Lyme disease a real medical problem or is it more of a, quote, mental issue, unquote?
Oh, no. This Lyme disease is a real disease.
Mm-hmm.
I live in tick country. I had four tick bites last year. Unfortunately, not everybody that has a tick bite gets Lyme. You have to be carrying the particular organism, and the tick has to be embedded usually for about 24 hours. before it can transmit. But Lyme disease presents itself usually with certain symptoms, not always. And if you become aware that you're infected, a fairly short course of antibiotics will usually end the problem. A small percentage of people are unlucky, and the disease progresses to a point where they can have serious symptoms that may not be reversible simply by killing the ticks. There's been an alternative view of Lyme raised where some doctors are diagnosing it in people that don't have it and giving long courses of antibiotics, 3 months, 6 months, even up to 2 years, which is completely unconscionable.
Okay. Heather, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Thank you. I subscribe to Consumer Reports on Health. It is specifically devoted to health issues. And one of the things that it has done is it looks at these, health food store things and examines what they may be able to do and what they might not be able to do. Do you consider that to be a thoughtful source of honest information? And I'll be happy to take your response off the air.
Thanks for your call, Heather.
Well, since 1990, that's been my favorite and most highly recommended health newsletter. There's no question. I mean, they're far and away the best and most practical source of health information in newsletter form. I'm a little disappointed in that they've ducked, I think, some of the hardcore quackery issues, despite my attempt to persuade the editors to include them. They used to be more active in that respect, but they give good practical advice, and it's a very fine source of advice. It's better than the magazine. The magazine is not, for some reason, the magazine is not as accurate. They came out with an issue just this week talking about the 12 most dangerous supplements and then a list of supplements that might be, I forget how they put it. I have it on my desk here. Hold on a second. What do they say? Supplements to consider. 11 supplements to consider. And I was rather perturbed by that list because there were some on there that nobody should consider. And I think their information was not at all sharp. They engaged in some speculations. And I was very unhappy. As a matter of fact, I almost never criticized them, but I did put out in my newsletter. I did hit them pretty badly for that particular list. But generally, Consumer Reports is reliable. It just doesn't get into enough quack things. The newsletter is outstanding.
Okay, we're in our last 4 minutes or so. Let me go ahead and take another in our last call. Carol, you're on line one. We just got a couple of minutes. What can we do for you?
Hello. I'm interested in knowing whether there is an actual scientific test to determine whether one needs specific vitamins or not. I got really interested in nutrition about 40 years ago when I was very, very young. And throughout the course of my life, I've tried different things at the behest of other people. And one time I was hurting in the areas of my kidneys when I took the vitamins, and so I quit, and I'd feel better, and then I'd hurt again, and so I quit. And, you know, people just say, well, these are nutrients, that's all they are. But right now, finally, 40 years later, I've decided everything that you put in your body is medicine of some sort, and I'm taking absolutely nothing. Is there some way to know if one does need some vitamins, or are there vitamins
okay.
that everybody
yeah, to needs? I don't have too much time left, but to answer your question, the short answer to your question is no. There's no practical specific test that will tell you whether you need vitamins. We have an article on quackwatch.org called Rational Use of Supplements. The way to go about things is not to look at what's in your body, but to look at how you're eating. and to see whether your diet might be missing something. There are certain groups of people who should consider taking a few supplements. Women, as they approach menopause or pass it, many of them will need to supplement with calcium, some with vitamin D. That's the main one that is likely to be of concern. But as far as taking products, seeing if you feel better, guaranteed, you can't do that. Most ailments that people have are self-limiting, and they'll have ups and downs in their symptoms. And so taking something won't necessarily even give you a clue. You won't necessarily even get a clue by how you feel. Most nutrients are not drugs. I'm sorry, most nutrients will not function instead of drugs. And so there are very few ailments that will be self-treatable with vitamins. And I would suggest that there's a lot you could read on QuackWatch, and we cover a whole bunch of different supplements. We have an index of supplements and articles about, I don't know how many, 30, 40, 50 of them. So that'll keep you busy for a few months.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for your call, Carol. We're in our last minute. I can't help but want to ask you about vitamin D. It's a hot item, especially for us in northern climates. You think that's being overdone or too early to say?
No. A lot of people need to take it if they're not accustomed to being in the sun much, and if they don't drink several portions a day of milk that has vitamin D added. They may very well wind up with not enough. I'm not sure the best way to go about deciding whether you need it or not, whether it's practical to do a vitamin D level, or what I can tell you is that it's a problem for a lot of people, and the medical profession, I think, has been increasingly recognizes this, but I can't lay out a strategy at it. It's not something that I've formulated yet.
It's been a quick hour. I want to thank you very much and ask you to keep up the good work.
Well, thank you.
I've enjoyed everything you do, and I'll keep watching and listening and reading. Line 1's going to return next week with a discussion on community health centers throughout the nation and Alaska with Marilyn Kazmar of the Alaska Primary Care Association. Pat Yak is Vice President of APTI News and Public Media. Kristen Spack engineered today's program. Josh Edge manned the phones. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1 Your Health Connection is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available on our website at kska.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.